This land is yours. This land is mine. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Okay, folks, welcome to the People Speak Radio Show here on VBS. This is your guest host, Charles Giuliani. Some of you might remember me. I've guest hosted off and on over the past couple years. And we got a very important guest this evening, Paul Peterson. He's been through practically the worst that can happen to former child stars when the Hollywood tide suddenly turns and one is no longer a part of the neat elite, so to speak. Today, Paul is the single most dedicated and devoted advocate in protecting both present-day child stars as well as stunted one-time celebrity tykes alike. He formed a group called A Minor Consideration back in 1990, a child actor support group, and it has since had a tremendous positive and profound effect in Hollywood. He first began his career performing as one of the original, at the age of 8 years old, one of the original Mouseketeers on the Mickey Mouse Club show back in 1955. He also appeared in such movies as The Monolith Monsters in 1957, Houseboat in 1958, opposite the likes of Cary Grant and Sophia Loren, before scoring big at age 12 as Donna Reed's son in the Donna Reed Show. So that's quite an impressive resume there. And so with no further ado, let me welcome Paul Peterson. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Well, thank you, Charles. Pleasure to be here. Well, it scares me sometimes when I think about the things I have done.
That's pretty impressive.
Well, you know, it just kind of happened. I don't think, at the beginning, there was certainly no thought of turning performing into a career. You know, when you're a kid, you do what's fun and what your parents support.
Sure.
But when I landed the part in the Donna Reed Show, everything changed because that was an 8-year job.
Wow.
That meant that I worked steady, for an actor, that's delicious. But it also meant that I became incredibly familiar to the country because we came into people's living room every Thursday night for 8 straight years. So I was there from age 12 to 20.
Wow. That's a long time.
Yeah, it really is. And, of course, it had profound effects on my life. One thing I certainly did not understand then, and it still baffles me even to this day, is that this show would leave such a mark that here we are in the year 2009, and but for my advocacy for the last 20 years, it's why people remember me. They have very good memories of my character, Jeff Stone, and of the Stone family. And there's a kind of fondness and a reservoir of affection that frankly, it's humbling. It also makes my work as an advocate for working children all the much easier because people know I know what I'm talking about.
Right. Been there, done that.
Yep. Got the T-shirt.
The old firsthand experience. But, you know, at the same time, as great as it was, I'm sure you enjoyed it. It had its drawbacks, though, too, didn't it? I mean,
absolutely.
You
know, what they don't understand. Go ahead.
I was just going to say you can't exactly say you had quote a normal childhood. I mean, that's not what the average kid grows up with.
No, exactly. And in fact, I tell stage parents and audiences all over this country, stop trying to rely on this foolish word normal. There is nothing normal about being on television or in
right.
the movies. It is a unique circumstance, and it's going to have consequences. That's the part that somehow or another ambitious people, whether they're children or parents or managers or agents or producers, they seem to forget that the consequences for a young person are going to be profound and they'll last forever.
Oh, sure.
I certainly was not prepared for the world I was, I suddenly found myself in after the Donna Reed Show went off the air in 1966. I try to explain to people, just remember for a moment how squeaky clean and well-mannered the people were on the Donna Reed Show and the kinds of stories we were dealing with. And when I came out into the civilian world, there were 500,000 troops in Vietnam. It was drug, sex, and rock and roll. The British music invasion had begun in earnest. The world was different.
A different place.
And
sure.
The truth of the matter is, I didn't fit.
Well, it's a big crash, too, because this had become a way of life for you, and now all of a sudden, you're sort of, quote, kicked to the curb, you know.
And, That's about it.
And what do you do? Yeah.
Well, that's about what happened. You know, here I thought in my little cocoon that I was being raised and trained to be the next Cary Grant. And little did I know that the world that I reentered had no use for a Cary Grant. They were much too busy having, alternative kind of stars.
Right.
So the question then is, what do you do with yourself? And I tell people as honestly as I can, I made a lot of bad choices, you know, whether it was in marriages or friendships or my choice in getting involved with the drug culture. And worst of all was not paying attention to my growing problem with alcohol, which took years to finally get settled.
Oh, I can imagine. In fact, I'm sure your group, a minor consideration, you must deal a lot with... I would imagine you provide, you know, different support, counseling and whatnot, right? I mean, this can be...
Well, absolutely. Within our population, we did a survey back in 1996, and it was a blind survey, total anonymity guaranteed, and among our population of genuine kid stars, we had three times the national average of addictive behaviors. Three times. Now, in the America we live in, one out of four kids are going to have trouble anyway. But our group, it's 75% of us, and this is out of a population of about 600 currently, are either actively in recovery or have long-time sobriety or are dealing with these issues to this day.
It's terrible. You know, and people often say, like, you know, Danny Bonaducci had his bout with that, and people would say, oh, what a bum he turned out to be, you know, but they don't stop to realize, what that does to somebody, you know, when they're...
Well, and the support structures, which frankly are pretty good. I mean, AA has a long track record, but even they have a very low, success rate. And for us, the problem is the absence of anonymity. You know, I can remember going into my first AA meetings. This was back east while I was living in Connecticut. And before I got home, there would be two or three phone messages. Hey, a friend of mine saw you at an AA meeting.
Oh, bro.
Now, that doesn't quite, hold true to the anonymity thing.
And then the tabloids are pouncing on you.
Well, you get that, and it seems that everybody knows your business. And one of the ways we are able to combat that within our own group, because frankly our success rate is the envy of the recovery business, is that we understand the impact of fame and notoriety, and we have ways to counter that so that we can equip the people who are struggling with these addiction issues. And remember, they cover the whole spectrum, everything from body image and eating disorders to gambling addictions and sexual addictions, not to mention the traditional drug and alcohol. Our group is very supportive, and all of us have learned lessons that we're able to share. And it's amazing when you get a guy like me, I'm 64 years old, I have no trouble talking to an 18-year-old bubblegum star because I've been there. I understand what they're going through. I too had stage parents. I, too, felt that kind of crushing fear as fame slips away. And we address those questions of what is your next adventure?
Yeah, you know, you can just imagine the big letdowns. One minute you're at the top, and then just overnight, literally. Now, was the show? What did they just suddenly cancel it? Did you know it was coming to?
Well, we knew the end was near. You know, Donna Reed had four children of her own at home, and began to feel rather keenly that she was being missed as a mother. And frankly, everybody was plenty tired. Well, I wasn't so much, but the adult cast had had enough. They've had pretty much worn out their characters, and or at least they felt that way, and the creative juices weren't as deep and interesting as when they started. And it was time. The Donna Reed Show was the last black and white family sitcom on network television. I mean, we weren't even broadcasting color.
I must say, that was just a little bit before my time. I have seen some of the, you know, the old reruns.
Well, yes, yeah, so you know, Donna Reed Show was the first show that the then brand new Nick at Night put on the air back in 1986, and we were on Nick at Night
for
9 years.
It. Sure, right.
Yeah, for 9 years. Can you imagine? Of course, it was part of that nostalgia boom that came to television.
Right. I'm getting some questions coming in via text here through Paltalk,
right.
One of the means through which we're co-broadcasting. This question comes from Anna Christine from Sweden, actually, listening in from Sweden. And she asks, what advice do you have for the stars of today going down that path of drugs and alcohol? That's kind of a broad question.
Well, we have, I'm not going to call these hard and fast rules that work every time.
Yeah, I mean,
but
it depends
when
on each
these
case.
When these strategies are employed, they're pretty successful. Number one, if you're a young star, the day you finish high school, you should take a break, leave the business behind for 4 years, go to college, which is what you were working for after all, and find out who you are, absent the notoriety. Currently, for example, young Emma Watson from Harry Potter has left her career behind, and God knows, so you can't have more successful string of movies, and she's at Brown University now, and we wish her well.
Wow.
It's the advice, if Billy Ray Cyrus were to call me, he'd hear from me in no uncertain terms that when Miley finishes high school, he ought to encourage her to make a major break. I don't care. She's earned enough money. But she should make the break now and develop her character and get her education. For her, I think she would have to do it in Europe. But it would have positive influences on her life. It works when it's tried. It worked for Brooke Shields, worked for Jodie Foster, worked for Ron Howard.
Wow, you've worked with all of these people?
Well, I tell people, the nice thing about having this kind of club, we have no dues, and there are no rules to membership, except you have to have achieved fame before your 18th birthday. And surprisingly, a large number of kids in sports qualify under that definition, and we just adopt them. We don't even let them join.
Now, I imagine you probably don't just get kids, right? You probably do get adults that were kid stars that still are going through a difficult time.
Oh, yes. One of the saddest things after a 20-year advocacy is to watch people get into trouble, and then finally their parents or their manager or maybe even the former kid star themselves will finally pick up the phone and call us. How we wish they would call in advance. Because so many of these problems, honestly, they can be mitigated. Steps can be taken to prepare everybody, including adult co-stars, for the road ahead.
Yeah.
And part of what we're able to say to people is there is a life after early fame. Charles, I believed, even as an author at that time of 10 books, that I would never get out from underneath the shadow of my childhood fame. Now, it's since happened that I've accomplished that. When people walk up to me, they don't talk about the Donna Reed Show or movies or hit records. They talk about the work I'm doing, trying to protect children in the workplace.
Right. Now, in addition to counseling and just general support, do you ever try to, you know, do you have still have connections in Hollywood to try to actually get them jobs? I mean, do you, like, you know, threaten producers?
Well, you know, I'm one of those people, and mind you, there is not a uniformity of opinion here. I'm one of those people who thinks if you got into trouble in the entertainment industry, probably the worst place you could go back to is the entertainment business.
Yeah, true. Sure.
You know, there are other things to do with your life.
To move on.
I can remember I was on a television show promoting my 10th book, Walt, Mickey, and Me, in fact. And I was in Cleveland, Ohio on a morning show, and one of the audience members looked at me. Now, mind you, this is my 10th book. And she said, well, gee, don't you miss being on television? And it just struck me wrong, and I said, excuse me. If you think that being a published author 10 times is less meaningful than being a kid on a television show, there's something wrong with you, not me.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem. People are spoiled by early fame. Either it came too easy, or they think it's their birthright, or they think it will last forever. But you can't even name adult stars whose careers were uninterrupted successes. It doesn't happen.
Right. It's kind of touch and go type thing.
Well, it is. I remember Burt Reynolds for 10 years was the number one box office movie star in the world, and then his career was over. He had to wait like 15 years
sure.
to come back.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. The questions are starting to really come in here. I've got another one. Some of these tend to be, some of them are kind of personal. I don't know how much you want to go into these.
I have no secrets in my life, Charles.
Personally, just other people that you've dealt with or potentially dealt with.
Well,
this question.
It depends. If discretion allows me to name names, I'm happy to do so.
Sure. And, you know, I mean, you don't have to answer if you don't feel comfortable. But this one comes from Precy in Philly, Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
asking, has John Gosselin contacted you for help?
He better. Well, you know, this is the astonishing thing about these reality shows. How could this man and his wife from Pennsylvania think that they were capable of handling the notoriety that comes with this kind of exposure? Based on what? I would have given him my best counsel 5 years ago. I have written about this extensively. That show has to leave the air. It should have left the air 2 years ago. And for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is that they are not compensating those children fairly.
Yeah, sure.
That's why there's a formal complaint at the Department of Labor and Industry in Pennsylvania. John Gosselin should be calling. I'm in contact with other family members. We're alarmed. You know,
not as yet, though.
I'm the easiest person to reach on earth. You know, even the theatrical unions, both SAG and AFTRA, and Equity, too. I am the only member of those unions that says outright to them, you will give people my number. My email and my Facebook page, they're all there for people. If you think there's a problem in a kid's life who has come to fame early, call me. We're real good at this, and guess what? We don't embarrass easy. We will intervene. I show up at places. I literally show up on sets.
Wow. Here comes another question. This is from Sheila from London. This is a good question here. She asks, what influence did your on-screen mother, Donna Reed, have on you?
Oh, it was profound. In fact, I just recently suffered the loss of my mother, and as my mother said, how could she compete with Donna Reed when I was with Donna for more hours between the ages of 12 and 20 than my own mother?
Wow.
And people have to understand that Donna Reed was an Iowa farm girl who worked hard through the MGM star system to become an Academy Award-winning actress. She was a smart cookie, and she was so generous in her affection and connection toward me. She and Carl Betz played the father, had seen the damage on previous long-running television shows when the adult stars stopped paying attention to the kids. And they vowed to our faces, to me and Shelley Fabre and later my little sister Patty, that they were our friends forever. And both of them lived up to that to their dying day. To their dying day.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, how could she not have had an influence? She was almost like a second mother figure, maybe first mother figure in some way.
Well, exactly. But look at some of the skills that this woman had that she was so happy to share. How to be well-groomed, how to handle the public, how to hang on to your reputation under difficult circumstances, how to do a good double take. How to make a joke work. You know, these are the things that when you're on a television show are of keen importance.
Now, did you keep in touch with her years, you know, after the show?
Absolutely. We had a lunch every month, pretty much until Donna died.
Are the cast members too?
All of the cast members, Shelley and Carl and Donna and I, lunch date was at the Bistro in Beverly Hills, and we loved it. I'm talking 5-hour lunches.
Oh, gee. That's great.
Now, I know, isn't that fun to be able to say? We liked each other. We truly did, and each of us, in our own fashion, went on to do some pretty interesting things. I was overjoyed to, you know, be able to get my alcoholism under control and launch a writing career, and even though Donna didn't see the birth of a minor consideration, she knew that after my book, Walt, Mickey, and Me, that I was cut out for this advocacy work, because I'm always taking in stray people and animals, you know?
Oh, that's fantastic. That in itself is kind of therapeutic, you know? I'm sure that helped over the years.
Well, it does. Like many people who are in recovery and live with long-term sobriety, you discover that when you are giving to others, you get so much more in return. It's difficult to describe, but that's what the giving back is all about. In fact, I was just swapping notes with Chuck Negron from Three Dog Night, you know, about what drives us. Well, the need, maybe, to make amends.
Yeah,
I know there are times in my, you know, having been, I traveled this country and frankly the world extensively, and when I meet someone and they say to me the following, you know, I met you many years ago in Cleveland, the first thing I will say is, do I owe you an apology? Because it very well could have been at the particular times in my life that maybe I wasn't the best person, nicest person to be around.
Well, it's always good. Sometimes you're a little hotter on yourself than you need to be. We all tend to do that, but
regardless, it doesn't work unless you aren't. You know, it's Danny Bonaducci explained one time to people how subtle and yet how open this thing called fame can be. He tried to work as a waiter. He was sincere about it, and he wanted to be a good waiter.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the truth was, people would leave the restaurant and say this, not I had a good waiter or I had a bad waiter. They would say, guess who waited on me? Danny Bonaducci.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
And that's a different kind of pressure.
Sure.
And that's what I'm worried about with the Goslin children and Nadja Suleiman, Octomom's children, that this notoriety is going to follow them forever. And frankly, I see nothing in their environment that is going to help them prepare for what comes next.
Yeah, I mean, it just has unfortunate adverse effects across the board in many ways that you can't even imagine.
Well, we have a gifted writer out here, Joel Ryan, and she is a wonderful writer. And I spent months with her trying to get her to understand that the problem is not so much the kid stars themselves, although we have all the human frailties. It's that the audience changes, and their perception of us changes. And in many instances, this is not unique to just Hollywood, people who once loved you turn on you. It's like for a quality athlete to fail. And it says a lot about our culture. And I was able to get Joel to understand, and she came to this conclusion in her writing, that many times our biggest problems aren't with ourselves, but with the way people remember us.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of ironic, isn't it? Because most people look up to Hollywood personages as, you know, the ultimate lifestyle. And,
but only for a while. Then they move on to other interests.
But the irony is, though, is that a lot of Hollywooders probably would rather have a simple life that you know, people that aren't famous have, you know.
Well, of course, the people in Hollywood are their own worst enemy. They could have a simple life. I remember years ago, at the height of my celebrity, with hit records and beautiful women and fast cars, I was at a restaurant at the Sorrentino's in Beverly Hills, and Frank Sinatra was at the next table. And we got to talking, and I asked him how he was able to still go out in public and have a private life and enjoy his friends, even in public settings. And he said, Paul, you have to wear them out. You show up at the same place 4, 5, 6 times in a row. All of a sudden, it's not a big deal anymore. It's the advice he tried to give to Elvis. Don't be a recluse. Get out there. Yes, it's a pain in the neck for the first few times you show up. But pretty soon people go, wait a minute, he's just out having fun. These days, however, we have young celebrities who are making a living simply showing up at club openings. What a funny world.
It is. We got, the questions are coming in. I'm hoping to get to all of them. My apologies to anyone if I don't have time to get to
the
questions.
Well, it's my long-winded answers.
Yeah. Well, we're not even quite halfway through the show yet, so hopefully we can get to these. This one comes from, we're going international tonight, big time. We got Harold from Puerto Rico.
Yes.
And he asks, do you feel that reality shows are the downfall of modern television? Interesting question.
In fact, I do. Because it's an insult. It's an insult to the intelligence of the American viewer.
Yeah, sure.
It is a shortcut. It's cheap. Producers like it. I mean, look at the shows that feature children. They don't pay the children.
Right.
They deliberately shoot these shows in jurisdictions that have very lax child labor laws, if they have any child labor laws at all. And are depending on the naivete and innocence of the children, like they did with Kid Nation. What an insult to everybody.
Yeah, very exploitive I guess trashy would be...
Well, that's exactly right, and people must understand that these shows are scripted, they have story arches, they have a Bible that they're working with, the production team is all on the same page, it's the people they turn the cameras on who don't realize that in the editing room that their participation is going to be altered. Now, you know, it used to be, especially the World War II generation, they understood the difference between entertainment and propaganda.
Yep.
And when John and Kate, for an illuminating example, turned from a very interesting look inside a unique family into a marketing vehicle, trouble was bound to happen.
And this kind of leads to the next question here. Eric from Iowa asks, what has happened to all the great movie writers as Hollywood died?
Well, they didn't all die. The truth is that if you're over age 35, think of this, you are passé, because all these young bucks and ladies who are running these networks these days, honest to God, believe that they're the first people on earth, and they will not hire older, seasoned, competent writers. In fact, the Writers Guild has had lawsuits about this, and many writers in desperation actually hire graduate students to be their pitchmen. They don't even go in on the pitch.
Wow. Yeah, it's sad. A lot of what comes out today, I must say, most of the movies, I'm just not impressed. Half of them I don't even want to see, and the ones I do go to see, you know, scarcely half of them were even worth it, you know?
Well, I agree with you, because they're derivative. They're a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there is much to explore and discuss these days, and sadly, the political tendencies of the entertainment business are no longer reined in and controlled. People set about actually making political films masquerading as entertainment.
Right. Yeah, I agree. It's pretty sad. Looks like you've got a proposal here. This comes from Alice in Connecticut. She says, Paul, I remember you on the Donna Reed Show. You were so cute. I was in love with you then. And now, are you married with a family?
Like
a natural
being
here?
Well, you know, it's always, I must tell you, it is really a source of great joy to me that people remember me fondly. But yes, I'm married. Yes, I have three children. I have a older boy, Brian, who is a neuroscientist at the University of California at Riverside.
Okay. Wow.
Second boy, who is a producer of television shows that you've heard of, Janice Dickerson Show, who wants to marry my dad. He's in the reality show game.
Oh, really?
Yep. And then my daughter, who's much younger, she's 22. She is starting her second tour with the United States Navy. She just got back off the USS Ronald Reagan, so she's doing just fine. Yep.
They span the whole rainbow of careers there.
Well, they really do, and I must tell you, as a father, they each one amaze me. They really, I don't know what I thought they would be doing as adults, but I brag on them constantly.
No, that's great. That's something to definitely be proud of there. Let's see. I was going to take another question, but you know what? We're right at the half-hour point, and I guess we'll take a short break. When we get back, we can take some more of these questions. So stick with us, folks.
Great.
We'll be right back.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine having banks and credit that serve the community, solvent and free of Wall Street corruption, that create strong local economy and job growth? Banks that put profits right back into the local business and economy, not into far-off foreign investments or high-risk and exotic finance schemes of the super-rich.
Yes, we can.
Can you imagine eliminating income tax, ensuring economic stability, increasing social programs, and improving the standard of living for all Americans while paying off the federal debt?
Yes, we can.
That's right. It's all possible.
Yes.
Can you join us in working towards a solution utilizing principles suggested by our founding fathers through united action and strategies outlined in articles, blogs, and Wiki spaces where you can share and collaborate?
Uh-huh.
Please visit Alan Brown's website, webofdebt.com, and help us make America's money and future of, by, and for the people once again. Can you do that?
Yes, we can.
Caution. If you are prone to being disturbed by real truth and real solutions, please continue to consult with your qualified Wall Street cheerleader economists on network television. Side effects for not visiting webofdebt.com include drowsiness, loss of job, loss of control of national finance, loss of country, followed by panic attacks and rude awakenings.
Join the World March for Peace and Nonviolence, an international three-month event spanning seven continents and over 1 million participants. With endorsements from luminaries worldwide such as President Jimmy Carter, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. The World March for Peace and Nonviolence seeks to bring attention to the need to end war and occupation, reduce arms spending, and all forms of violence. Please visit theworldmarch.org.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. Thousands of sick and dying patients find marijuana effective as a medicine, including cancer, MS, and AIDS patients. 9 states have legalized its use. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
We teach them how to tie their shoes. They teach us how to live our lives. We teach them long division. They teach us how to bank online. Our children will always outgrow us. But for the first time in generations, they may not outlive us. Over the last 25 years, the percent of overweight children aged 6 to 11 has doubled. the percent of overweight teenagers tripled. Obesity kills. Heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, all are linked to obesity, a problem that could be greatly reduced just by having a place to exercise. Right now, people are working hard to put parks and playgrounds where children live, where children will use them. Finding out how you can help is as easy as tying your shoes. Log on to EarthShare.org now, a public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
This land is yours.
Join us on the People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact the world and make a difference. That's the People Speak every Tuesday, 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the People Speak Radio Show here on BBS Radio. Once again, our guest is Paul Peterson, known mostly for his role as Donna Reed's son of Donna Reed Show. He's now working with child actors. He started a support group called A Minor Consideration that's serving a very important function in Hollywood circles because of the literal trauma that child actors go through when their show is canceled or just, you know, discontinues and their whole life is left hanging in midair. The effects are traumatic across the board. And so, yeah, we've been having a really great discussion. Some really interesting questions have been coming in. In fact, let's see what we've got here. Okay, we just read Alice in Connecticut's question. Now we have Lilith in Great Britain. She says, my daughter is 10 and tried out for Britain's Got Talent show. She was required to fill out a whole bunch of contracts, and even though she didn't make it past the tryouts, what would you suggest to parents of child stars to do the lookout for their kids who are entering the, you know, this business, entering this field?
Well, first of all, parents who aren't experienced should not sign anything without contacting a qualified entertainment attorney. They should be writing emails to me asking for my advice. You know, up on smokinggun.com, they still have the contracts that the 41 sets of parents signed for Kid Nation, and they are unenforceable. They would be thrown out of court in a second, and yet these people live in fear that Big Bad CBS and Tom Foreman Productions are going to come after them. And I'm here to tell you that these unenforceable contracts will, in fact, come back to haunt CBS, because every child in the world, in the Western world, has what is called the right of disaffirmance. If somebody signed a contract on your behalf that is grossly unfair and deliberately exploitive, when you turn 18, not only can you turn your back on that contract and the parents who signed it on your behalf, you can sue the daylights out of the company that did that to you.
Wow. Yeah, sure.
And that's what people have to remember. Now, it is true that if you raise a fuss in the run-up to getting a contract, they'll just move on to the next kid, because there's always someone willing to sell out their children, as we just witnessed with Balloon Boy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but these contracts, people have to remember that the children are the ones who are impacted. Parents get to stay invisible. In fact, I would tease my mom all the time. She never got recognized in the supermarket. I did. And I kept trying to say to her, Mom, that's the difference. Don't you see?
You know, you often think of these unscrupulous Hollywood producers exploiting kids, you know, but sure, the parents are doing it too in some
instances. Well, absolutely. And I must tell you, in every advance in the law, because we literally have passed legislation in more than a dozen states, and we are very active within the community, the producers are frankly on our side because they're tired of the black eyes. Yes, it's expensive to hire kids. It should be.
Yeah.
And frankly, there are employers all over America. People have to remember this. It's not just kid actors who are exempt from federal child labor laws. I have 800,000 children in our growing fields here in America who are picking our crops, and they too are exempt from federal child labor laws. We got to fix this. We have to fix globally, Charles. You'll
sure.
be astonished. 250 million children go to work every day. About half of them go to work because they have to eat.
Yeah.
So I'm deeply sympathetic to them. And we former Kid Stars, because people know we understand what it means to be a working child, we take up their cause. I am tired of having young athletes, about 300,000 get paychecks here in America. I'm tired of them sacrificing their education and then going before Congress after graduating major universities and playing NFL football and admitting that they're illiterate.
Wow.
That's wrong.
Yeah, that's
wrong.
How was the school scene for you? Was it anything like today,
or was it
better?
Charles, I was blessed. Are you kidding? I had a private tutor for 8 years. My own teacher, Dr. Lillian Barkley, had 3 doctorates, thank you very much.
Wow.
I adored her, and she was willing to deal with me, given the circumstances. The workload was intense. But on my off days, I had wonderful instruction. It was all a learning experience. And best of all, I had the support of Donna Reed and Carl Betts, both college graduates, both committed to making sure that I got my education. And in my instance, I'm pleased to say, whatever my personal failings may have been, I did get my education, and I'm trying to put my education and my experience to positive uses.
So would you say things were better in that regard years ago than they are today?
Well, look, sometimes the work situation can be poisonous. Just think of the show Different Strokes. Here was a show where education was put on the back burner, where the welfare of the children's character and their emotional growth wasn't given a thought. And, of course, look at the trouble. Dana Plato, dead. Todd Bridges, when we started, was in jail on attempted murder charges. He has since turned his life around completely. I'm so proud of him. And Gary Coleman, alone, all alone, suing his parents. I mean, look at the circumstance with Gary. He made $18 million, and at the end of Different Strokes, his parents were rich, his lawyers were rich, his manager was rich, his agent was rich, and Gary was working as a security guard.
Yeah.
Something wrong with this picture.
Right. That was really sad.
Well, we have changed the laws that left Gary so vulnerable, at least here in California. Now the kid who does the work owns the money. People don't seem to understand that in Western civilization, parents own the money that their children make.
Yeah, so that has changed.
At least in California for the entertainment business. That means all the kids in rodeo, in sports, who endorse skateboards, who are in professional dance companies, the money they earn belongs to the kid, and the parents have to act as trustees. And we're vigilant about this.
That's great. That's fantastic. That's one real...
Well, it should be worldwide, tell you the truth.
Sure, I agree. Let's see, we've got, this one comes from, oh boy, these questions are coming in pretty fast here.
Isn't it nice? There's global interest.
Yeah. Geez, I can't even keep up with them. Let me see here. I gotta scroll back, in fact. Okay. This is from, BW in Pittsburgh. He asks, do you keep in touch with, Shelley Faber?
No, Shelley Fabre, yes.
She was my television
sister, and of course went on to a distinguished career, not only 3 movies with Elvis, but long-running jobs on All Going Backwards, Coach, One Day at a Time, The Brian Keith Show. She's a great gal, and she's just like one of my sisters.
Oh, excellent. Sorry for the mispronunciation there. I really got to brush
up
that's
my Hollywood
trivia.
It's like Brett Favre. If you're a sports guy, you'll remember when they announced Brett Favre.
Yeah, right.
Poverty is a tough name.
Right, right. We got another one from Precy in Philadelphia, who asks, why doesn't the Gosselin family see the problem like the rest of us?
Well, because they're in a bubble. Just think who surrounds John and Kate. Publicists and managers and production executives. They don't understand what they're doing. And how could they? They weren't raised and trained in this business.
Sure.
They had a certain ambition, and they put their family in front of the super chief, if you will, and they have not yet taken the time out to pause and reflect on what they're doing. And it's such a shame, but fame is addictive. And certainly we can say that Kate Gosselin is doing all she can to stay on the covers of the tabloids.
Sure, sure. Here comes an interesting question here. This is Crystal from Los Angeles. She asks, what advice do you have for a woman married to an up-and-coming star when there are old girlfriends and fans all after him? Shotgun? Or?
Look, you have to deal with this with grace and with dignity and understand that the public's perception of the person you love is quite different than you as a potential spouse. My wife handles it beautifully, and it helps me that she was a huge, and still is a huge, Elvis Presley fan. So she gets it, you know.
She doesn't point the gun at them, she points it at you.
it's really interesting how many people of a certain age, women particularly, will come up to me and quite openly say, "You were my first love. I had your pictures plastered all over my bedroom walls." And I get that, and I appreciate it. And I sort of, it's like a little inside joke. And people, I have to be understanding, because let me tell you, the most difficult words I hear in the course of a day is when someone of a certain age comes up to me and says, "Gee, I used to love you." That's painful. I know they don't mean it that way.
Right.
But it just tells you
where their
image of me is in the past.
Sure.
I much prefer when people come up to me and say, "We love the work you're doing with working children." Or who say, come up to me and say, "We support you in your lawsuit against Octomom." Because we need people's, not only their understanding and support, frankly, we survive on financial contributions, because this job has gotten so much larger than I ever dreamed when my wife and I started it back in 1990. It's
you know, that's something I wanted to ask you about, and since you brought it up now, probably an appropriate time, did you have like a website where people can go if they wanted to?
Oh my goodness, yes. It's our lifeline to people. It's www.minorcon, MINORCON as in Nora, .org. We're a 501c3. We've been on the internet for, 16 years now, I guess.
Wow, great.
And it is, we are open and accessible. If you send an email to me through the webmistress, I will get back to you. We answer questions. We pick up the phone. I'm not hiding from anybody.
Excellent. So there you go, folks. Worthy cause.
Or, of course, you can take a shortcut, too, and just go for Paul Peterson, spell Peterson, S-E-N, on Facebook. It's really so satisfying to be able to stay in contact with people. I like people.
Oh, I hear you. And I bet you enjoy, checking your messages every day and getting encouraging.
I do. I truly do. It's funny. Shelley Fabre and I, of course, both had pretty big hit record. Shelley had a monster hit in a song called Johnny Angel, and people remember my song, My Dad, very fondly. And it was so, just to tell you how personalities are different. Shelley dreaded singing in front of people, whereas I've never met a microphone I didn't love. I enjoy it.
Yeah, I bet. Okay, let's go on to, but I know what you mean. I've been doing radio for quite a few years, and I really look forward every day to getting those emails, and I must say, very, very rarely do I get anything negative. It's usually very positive, and, Well, it's good to know you're...
And even when it's negative, you got to deal with that, too. It gets my juices flowing.
Right, there you go.
You know,
that can inspire you as well.
Well, you know, in my life, I am often put in these positions on national television, on news broadcasts, or in discussion groups, where people actually dispute with me who have had no experience whatsoever in the field. And I must tell you, I'm a pretty blunt person, and I look at them and say, and what are you bringing to this game? Have you ever been famous? Have you had to sign autographs when you were 13, 14, 15 years old? You know what it's like to lose your fame?
Right.
And, of course, they don't. They rely on perhaps their university education as a psychologist, but that doesn't cut it. That's not down there where you really live. How do you deal with an overly ambitious stage parent when you know your career is over and you want to stop, and they won't let you?
Sure.
Well, if you think that's unique, you go get Andre Agassi's book.
Right. Let's see. We got another question from, this is Michelle from Connecticut, and she asks, how do you feel about homeschooling after your positive feelings about your onset tutor?
I'm not a big fan of homeschooling because, you know, Hollywood can corrupt most anything it touches. And homeschooling in the entertainment business is often used to avoid the need for a teacher on the set. And, frankly, a child who is working in the business needs to do that transition back to be with his school chums in regular school. They need it more than anybody. And if they have the performer's mentality, they need to be able to be with other people, not to perform for them, but to learn from them, to watch how they handle life.
School isn't just academics, it's the social
interaction. No, not in the least. Although we may be, the pendulum has perhaps swung too far in the wrong direction.
Yeah. But, I can relate to that. Let's see, we got a question here from Dan in Oregon. He asks, you once had a hit single. How did that experience compare with being on a hit TV show?
Well, it was wonderful. You have to understand, I was friends with Ricky Nelson, who, of course, was the first bubblegum star, you know, the first kid growing up on television with hit records. And, of course, Ricky helped invent rock and roll. And as a young person, at 13 and 14-year-old, I wasn't shaving and I wasn't driving. I just loved the way the girl screamed for him, and I said, give me some of that. I had a good time. And, of course, when you're on a television show and you can perform on that show, you know, they would create whole scripts for us where we could sing our songs. You're almost guaranteed success. I was not alone in this. You know, Johnny Crawford from the Riflemen had hits, you know, certainly David Cassidy and a bunch of other kids.
Oh, yeah.
But I enjoyed it. Now, I wouldn't make my living doing that because, frankly, I have too much respect for the music and the music makers to compete with them at that level. But given the time, I had a great time.
David Cassidy did write his own songs, huh?
Well, yes, he did.
Wow. No kidding. Yeah, he had quite a few big hits. Let's see, we got Mike in Arizona. He asks, do you cringe at parents when they push their kids into showbiz, and did you have any anger toward your parents for pushing you?
Well, look, I have always tried to be honest. I got started in show business because my mother was bigger than me. Now, in my mother's defense, she had a kid who could sing, who could dance, who won every talent competition I ever entered. Now, mind you, I was young, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old. And there was some justification for this belief because when I went up for the auditions on the Mouseketeers, there were 5,000 kids trying out for 16 jobs, 2,500 young women and 2,500 boys. Well, they hired 16 kids, and I was one of them. And there was a reason for it, because I could sing and I could dance and I loved to perform.
Yeah, you gotta love what you do, no matter what it is, you know.
Well, what I often tell parents who are nervous about their children's talent and desire to enter the show business, I try to say to them, look, God really does make talented children. He makes math wizards, and he makes musicians, and he makes actors. And if you've got one of those kids who is a standout, whom all their third and fourth and fifth grade chums say, he's the one, mm-hmm. Well, God help you, you got your hands full. It's just as difficult as having a violin virtuoso, a protege under your roof. What are you going to do? Well, sure. You do the best you can.
Encourage, not push, but encourage, you know, let that talent
encourage,
fall out.
Always, and yet yeah. Insist on some kind of grounding. You know, right. When you are gifted like that, and I think nearly all the talented people I ever knew throughout my life, they all had a very keen sense of giving back, that this, whatever their particular talent was, they were willing to share it, and they were quite generous in their sharing. Because, you know, it's not always the kids who can sing and dance. Often it's that math whiz. We had one in my third grade class, Jeffrey Omont, who would sit down with our slowest kids and make sure they passed that grade level.
Yeah.
And he did it quite naturally and openly, and there were never hard feelings.
Yeah. They have to want to do it. You got to make sure that they're enjoying it, you know, the moment they stop enjoying
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And all stage parents should understand that you don't have to have a national commercial or a television series to enjoy the entertainment arts.
Right.
You know, doing a small part in a college play can be very satisfying.
Sure. Unfortunately, Paul, we've run out of time. I wish we had more time, but I want to thank you again for coming on. Once again, folks, Paul Peterson. And his website, if you want to give tax.
Yes, let me give it
donations.
Again. Minorcon.org, or just Google Paul Peterson or go on Facebook. You'll find me.
And that's spelled minorcon.org.
Right, and Peterson is spelled the Danish way, S-E-N. Charles, I've so enjoyed our time together.
Same here. Thank you very much for coming on. Really enjoyed it.
You bet.
Okay, folks, that's it for tonight. Next week, just to let you know, we have Beth Portello and Philippe Diaz coming on, filmmakers of The End of Poverty. You don't want to miss that. Until then, have a great week, and we'll see you next week. Take care.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea wall, by the relief of death, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering how this land was made for you and me. This land is yours, man. This land is mine, land from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land was made for you and me.